Really hope you enjoyed today's podcast. We have on Travis Hawks, a longtime, just good guy, friend. I'm going to read a little bit of his background. He graduated from Boise State University in business. He is a longtime serial entrepreneur, owns multiple business, venture capital, real estate, retail. We'll talk a lot about his businesses on today's podcast. He's the chairman of Sports Fan Group, which is 25 retail stores. He's a board member and advisor of multiple startup and tech companies. And he is the CEO and co-founder of Capital Auto Loans and the managing partner and co-founder of Capital 11. You'll really enjoy this this discussion with Travis Hawks.
Hey, the rest of us just get to like follow along on Gamecast on ESPN, but you're like jet setting.
That was fun.
Colorado State last night.
Yeah.
Hey, BJ Raines must be making bank because he's flying around people on private jets to games and stuff.
Wow, he didn't pay for that.
Did you pay for it?
No, it's good. It's good.
Who paid for it?
The owner of the jet offered that up to BJ.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that nice? It was a fun.
You and Stan?
Stan and Bauscher.
Maddie Bauscher.
Yeah.
It was a fun sitting right time. Behind the bench.
Oh, man. Yeah. There might have been a time early on when Bauscher got into it with some fans, and I had to hop in.
Hey, let me just tell you something. I wouldn't get in the middle of that. Let me just tell you.
It was fun. I'll tell you one.
Bauscher's been working out a lot. He can probably take care of himself. And Trav, I don't
That's
want.
That's why I felt really confident getting involved.
Yeah. Hey, let me help you.
Yeah. So there was a really bad call early on Buzo on a block. And Bauscher was just hammering the referee. And then at a timeout, the referee came right over to us. He's like, "You got to get over it, dog." He said that to Bauscher. And then Bauscher was like,
"You got to get over it, dog?
You got to get over it, dog."
Hey, what happened? I mean, it wasn't on TV, so.
Well, it was on the Mountain Network.
What?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
The hell is a Mountain Network?
It's free. It's on Apple TV. You just download the app. How do you not know this?
Man, I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, you can watch the games.
No, I'm sitting there. I'm sitting there watching Gamecast.
No, it was on the Mountain Network. Man, I don't know if you've ever been there. Great environment.
Was it?
Yeah.
I've never been there.
So sold out, 8,000 people, loud.
Kind of a weird looking stadium.
Yeah. Yeah, they played, Colorado State played really well, hit shots, we missed, you know, we didn't play well. It's just, you know how it is, conference play.
So do you have to wait for BJ to get done with his after thing before you come back?
Yeah, so we waited, we were giving him a hard time because we were like, dude, no one's watching your show, let's just go.
You need to look down and say, like, there's like eight people, and four of us are right here.
Yeah, four of us are right here. So yeah, it wasn't too long. We waited about 30 minutes after and then headed back, so. It was fun. I got
a fun trip.
Chance to talk to Leon for a minute after the game as well. And
I like Leon a lot.
It's just, I mean, the Mountain West is so good, so deep. It's just every day.
So let's talk about Saturday, right?
Yeah.
So huge game.
Huge game. I don't know if you know this. It's Stu Morrill night. They're naming the court after Stu Morrill.
That's all we need.
Yeah. So the crowd's going to be amped up. But pressure's on Utah State. They've lost two in a row. You saw they lost last night.
I know. Hey, but how much do they hate Max and Leon?
They hate him so much. So, you know, my daughter has been going to school at Utah State, and she will send me pictures from the games that Boise State's not playing that have signs about Max Rice.
They hate him.
Every game, there's signs about Max Rice. They hate him.
You know what I love about it? I think Max just eats it up.
Oh, he loves it.
He just eats it up. That guy's tough as nails.
Saturday's his last game in Logan, so he's got to come through in a big way.
Oh, he'll come through.
He's got to shut those students up.
He'll come through.
Yeah.
He'll be great.
Yeah.
Hey, gosh, I don't even know where to start with you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I don't know if you know that, like, the people on Twitter have been calling for this to happen for a long time.
Yeah.
So this is giving the people what
they
want.
We've had calls straight to the, like we've had, like, what's the number one call front desk? It'd say, when's Travis Hawks getting up?
Yeah.
I said, as soon as possible.
Yes. That's the main thing people are worried about when it comes to BVA is when am I going to be on the
podcast? Hey, so I was thinking about having you on, and we're good friends, obviously, but I knew your dad way before I knew you.
Yeah.
Way before I knew you. And I'll talk about your dad in a second, but I remember the very first time I met you. You probably won't remember this. But it was when Mitt was running for president, and you were the guy.
Yeah.
And that's like, I heard, like, this guy was raising all this money for Mitt and had this relationship with Mitt. And I always have been, will be forevermore a Mitt fanboy.
Yeah.
And you were at a basketball game, and I walked up to you and I said, "Hey, are you Travis Hawks? You're the guy doing the Mitt Romney thing." And it was at a little gym, and that's when I met you first.
Okay.
You don't remember that?
I don't remember that. What I do remember was coming over to your office over at over by St. Luke's.
Yeah.
That building you built there, Portico.
Yeah. Okay?
I remember coming over because I had communicated with you and you said you would donate. And I remember coming over there and getting a check and meeting you and your dad. And I was like super scared to go in there. And your dad kind of freaked
out. You should be
out.
If my dad is there.
Your dad kind of freaked
you should
me
be.
Out.
He's the funny thing about my dad is like people that know him now, they're like, was he really that kind of, was he really a badass before? And I'm like, yeah, he was. He's mellowed. Now people talk to me like, he's this nice old guy.
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about Bill.
Okay.
So my neighborhood, Bill Hawks was in my neighborhood, and I knew him for a long, long time, and probably one of my favorite guys on the planet, a legend. I'm gonna tell one story.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna ask you to tell a story.
Okay.
So Travis's dad, Hawks Motors, was one thing, but he was a serial entrepreneur, business guy, and one of the most humble, just nicest guy ever, but. There was a time when we were serving together in a church thing. We're trying to help people that would move in that needed stuff. And your dad, he was always the employment specialist. So anybody that needed a job, you called your dad.
He right? loved that.
And he loved it. I think he did it for like...
Yeah, he just always volunteered.
Volunteered,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
And so this guy moves in, and he needs help. He has two kids, single dad, no job. And I go meet him at his, he has a little apartment. And I said, "Hey, how can we help you?" And he's like, "I don't have a job. I've got these kids." And he had hair all the way down and tats everywhere. Earrings, like looked like he fell into a tackle box kind of guy, right?
Yeah.
You know, proud of the nipple piercings you could see through the t-shirt kind of thing. And I'm like, two sweet kids. So I call, this is early when I didn't know your dad that well, but he was the guy that I called, and I'm like, "Hey, Bill, you know, I'm helping this guy out. I still remember his name. I won't say it, but can you go help me out? He needs a job." And he's like, "Sure." He said, "Does the guy want to work?" And I said, "I think so." He's like, "Well, if the guy wants to work, I'll get him a job by tomorrow." Okay. So that's my first, I'm like, okay, great. You haven't seen his nipple piercing yet. So I go back down there 2 days later and knock on the door, and the same guy answers the door. He's had a haircut. He doesn't have any piercings in anymore. He's got a really good job, and the entire apartment is furnished.
Wow.
And I'm like, "Hey, what happened?" And he's like, "Hey, do you know Bill Hawks?" He says to me, and I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "The guy came down here. He brought us food. He furnished my apartment, and he's got me a job. He's picking me up and taking me to work and coming back." And I'm like, that was my introduction to Bill Hawks. And I think those stories, once you get to know your dad, happened again and again and again and again. What's your favorite story of your dad?
Yeah, well, I'll just say to that, like, you know, so my dad passed away in 2018. And one of the things that happened when that happened was I just heard all those types of stories that I had never heard. Like some things I'd heard over time, but then I'd get all these texts and people at the funeral and everything that tell me those types of stories, because he never advertised, you know, those things that he did. So a couple things. One story that I love is, so he moved here from Pocatello in 1969, and he opened a used car dealership here, and he had a partner. And after a couple years, like, you know how it can go, it just wasn't working out great with the partner. And they decided, like, it's best for us to part ways. And so they both had agreed to that. And they decided, you know, one was going to stay on that lot and one was going to leave and open another lot. But they both wanted to stay. And so ultimately, how they decided to resolve the situation was flipping a coin. And so the winner got to stay and the loser had to go.
Did Bill win?
Bill lost. So he had to go to the other side of downtown and open a lot. But he would do that all the time when he would be doing car deals. And, you know, you're negotiating back and forth and maybe you're within $500 of a price. He would say, "Let's flip a coin for it." He loved to do that. And he actually, I would see him win more than he lost. But he lost on that one. And then, you know, I tell people all the time, like, I think one of the greatest things I learned from my dad was just hard work, right? And he worked so hard. He worked 6 days a week. He worked, you know, just worked extremely hard. And back in 2006, when we opened the Blue and Orange store and we had the Fiesta Bowl season and it was just so busy, like that was a cool experience because I got to work really closely with my dad during that time. And we were both just kind of at the mall all day, every day. But my dad, who, you know, is 40 years older than me, like, I mean, I would get there. I would wake up early. I would be like, I'm going to get there early. There's so much to do. Get there at 7 a.m. You know, he's already there. And then I'd work, keep kind of looking around and see, like, did he leave? He's still there. And finally at like 7 p.m., I'm just exhausted. And I'm like, Dad, I gotta go home. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. You can go home. Like, I'll stay. And he just would always outwork me. And it was, and he outworked everybody.
Hey, his voicemail too.
Oh yeah. I mean, the push-ups, that one.
Well, he would change every once in a while, but a couple of my favorites, one of them was, hey, you reach Bill Hawks. I don't know how I missed you because I'm always working. Yeah, my phone's on 24/7. I will call you back within the hour, or if not, you call me back because it's always on and I'm always working.
I work 7 days a week. Yeah, 24 hours a day. That's right. He had that for a long time. He didn't want to miss a deal. So, yeah.
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah.
So you've got a lot going on. When we talked about doing this, there's so many different things to talk about. But business is good. You've like exploded with Capital 11.
Yeah, it's been good. We're excited and you know, really excited about Boise. I mean, I know that's you know, something that we both agree on is just the future of Boise, and we're excited about that and the potential, and there's a lot of good things happening.
Talk about, so as you've put Capital 11 together, you've invested in a lot of startup businesses and have a lot going on. Talk about the environment here for new startups. We have a lot of business guys that listen to this and what your take is on it. And if there's anyone out there that has a new business or an idea, or just talk about the ecosystem.
Yeah. So we're just extremely bullish on Boise as a tech ecosystem. And you're familiar with, you know, you drive down Point of the Mountain in Utah and you see all those buildings. And you see the names at the tops of the buildings, and you're like, I don't even know what that company is. And then you Google them, and it's like, oh, they sold for $1 billion, right? And so we feel like Utah is, you know, 15 to 20 years ahead of Boise from a tech ecosystem standpoint. And we started on the venture capital side of our business about 5 years ago with that thesis that Boise ecosystem was really going to go. And COVID accelerated that because of the influx of talent, specifically from Seattle and the Bay Area and those things. And then also just the broader venture capital market has changed, where it used to be that these larger kind of upstream VCs were much more geographically focused, you know, Andreessen just investing in the Valley. Now they're all pretty much geographic agnostic. And we talk to these upstream VCs every day, and there's no pushback on Boise. There's no pushback on investing in Boise. So what we've seen over 5 years is we've seen the quality of entrepreneurs increase here and the quality of deals increase here. And we've invested in 50 companies now over the last 5 years that are, you know, on that kind of technology startup side. About 60% of those are Boise-based. The other 40% are kind of spread all over based on relationships. And, you know, I think it's going to be game-changing for this valley because it's going to create and continue to create really high-quality jobs.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that. And it's also going to, you know, as those great outcomes happen, it's going to lead to... That's how a flywheel in an ecosystem goes, right? Is those exits happen, people reinvest in the community. Again, we're seeing this, you know, in Utah. The one other thing I'll say that's made a big difference for Boise is the acceptance of a distributed workforce, because it used to be the knock on Boise as a tech ecosystem was, are there enough engineers here to build?
That's all you heard for a
decade. That's all you heard. Yeah. Is there enough engineers here to build multiple unicorns? And quite honestly, the answer was no. But now we don't need all those engineers here. You know, if we can have the C-suite here and the headquarters here and you know, the sales team here and those types of things, and the engineers are distributed, then that works, and that's acceptable in today's, you know, investment environment, and that's a big win for Boise.
What are of those 100? Like in your office, you have a wall with companies. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Talk about a couple of those ones you're most excited about.
Yeah, there's and it's building a company, building a startup from the ground up, I always say is like the hardest thing in the world to do. And these companies they're always undermanned. They're undercapitalized. I mean, they're just doing the hardest thing. And one of the things that's most amazing that I talk about is there'll be a company with 10 people, you know, maybe all in their 20s working there, and they're on the phone with a Fortune 100 company closing a deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just kind of a miracle that it works. But yeah, there's some great local things happening. There's a company that we're really excited about that's here local that's called PestShare, that's built essentially a software technology around pest control of and specifically with renters, with like people, single family houses, you know, rentals, where there's this big pain point. And it's just exploded. Like, we invested in them for the first time a couple years ago. The traction they're getting nationwide now, they're becoming a household name in the property management space, and doing these massive deals with these big owners of properties. And it's three local guys here that started it that are just, you know, amazing grinders out there, you know, working hard every day. So we're really excited about that. We mostly do software, but there's a company, we did a hardware investment for a company called Bold Hue that's about to launch their product. A local founder, there's two founders, one is here and one's in Denver. The one in Denver, it's two female founders. She's a former NASA engineer. And they have built a product where way outside of my wheelhouse because we're talking about beauty and makeup, but you scan your face with the little tool, and then it's kind of like a Keurig, and it mixes up the foundation to match your color palette. And what's amazing about this is they are going completely viral on TikTok, et cetera, with no marketing spend. So
what's it called?
Bold Hue.
Bold Hue.
Yeah. So in fact, if you saw that, that TikTok thing, you'll see. So I mean, they have videos.
When you say viral, have they gone as viral as I did with my daughter?
Well, I know your daughter's was a big one, but they have a video with 20 million views.
That's not bad.
On Bold Hue, and this is again with no marketing spend. So anyway, that's been really
cool. Oh, check that out.
So yeah. So their product is launched. So you can see it there on the top left, what the product looks like. So that product is going to launch in Q2 this year, and it's a potential. I mean, this is a game changer for a company like this to, you know, come out of Boise. So we're excited about that. It was again way outside of our wheelhouse to invest in a beauty company, but we love the founders, and we're excited.
That's great. So Dave Gardner, you guys are partners in crime.
Oh yeah.
And all that stuff.
Yep. Known Dave. You know, me and Dave met when we were both students at Boise State. And so we've known each other a long time, been friends a long time. And we're, I think, a good mix. Dave is great on, the financial side. He focuses a lot of that. And then, you know, he's the very, like, level partner, right, where I'm kind of erratic.
Really?
So, yeah, that may be surprising to you. So, it's been good. And we've got a great team as well. As you know, that's the key to this is building and retaining a great team.
What is the capital market like for startups here? And for a long time, kind of just the investment opportunities, matching them up with these new companies, we lag behind kind of like the Wasatch Front. But what is that like now?
No question. It's still an undersaturated capital market. And that's not the best for founders. It's good for us because there's more opportunity, but we want more, you know, we hope more VCs come here and set up shop. Again, back to what I said earlier about people getting away from the geographic boundaries is helping a lot. Like the PestShare, the example I gave earlier, we did the initial kind of pre-seed round, and then there was a seed round done last year, kind of into summer, and a company called Metaprop that's based in New York City, they led that round. There was another group, Vesta, that's out of California. They participated in the round, and we participated in the round. There was another VC out of Buffalo, New York, that participated in the round. So that outside capital coming in is critical, and you really need both. Like you need the local capital and people who really care about the local ecosystem, but then you need that outside capital coming in. And so it still needs to improve. Like there's still a ways for it to go. You know, Utah is a very oversaturated capital market when it comes to startups. We're undersaturated, but that's again a big focus of us, is that we're out there telling that Boise story to all the VCs we can get in front of, and trying to get those companies on their radar. Bold Hugh, who I just mentioned, they're about to do a round that's being led by a VC out of California, out of the Valley. So those types of things are happening, but there's, you know, we're still early days.
Tell, I don't know the answer to this, but like if the companies you invest in, what kind of size of investment is like an average investment of those you're dealing with?
Yeah. So we've kind of evolved over time. Where we're at now is we're generally investing in a seed round, generally kind of at commercialization or post-commercialization, but there can be exceptions to that. And we're generally writing like a $250,000 to a $1 million first check, somewhere in that range. And then we like to follow on in subsequent rounds, and kind of how we've modeled it now is like our max kind of investment in a company would get up to probably $2.5 million, and then that's probably the most we would do in one company. But those first checks, you know, now we're most often around that 500 range, but we can go up as high as a million on a first check.
That's great. What are the other challenges here for I know we talked a little bit about the engineers.
Yeah.
But it seems like there have been so many people move in. You don't hear a lot of shortage on executive level or talent.
Yeah.
Does that come up in your world?
It does for sure. I mean, I think it's a big question. And when people ask me, like, what does the Boise ecosystem need? It's the answer is everything. Like, we're still in early days. Mm-hmm. So we really need everything. Like, we've got a great base. We've made a lot of progress. But we still need everything. We need more capital. We need more talent. We need, you know, just more of, you know, more programming and more opportunities and all those things. When it comes to talent, like, I've been, and you probably have some of these similar experiences. Like, I'm so amazed at the people I'll meet with on a weekly basis that have moved here, like are under the radar, you don't really know. And it's like, yeah, like I'm just kind of working from home and I work for Google, or, you know, I just left this job or whatever. Like the talent level is increasing, and that's so critical to building this, is that talent. And the next step we really need is for some of these companies to get those great outcomes, so then that capital and talent can recycle in the ecosystem. And we've had some good success stories here, Cradle Point and T-Sheets and Clearwater Analytics and some of these, but we need more of those. And especially what really helps is when there's a diverse cap table where a lot of people benefit from the exit. And then there's a lot of talent that, again, can go.
That's part of that flywheel you're talking about.
Yes,
a bunch
absolutely.
Of people benefit, that those dollars stay in the community.
And the talent.
Yeah, and maybe we could talk a little bit about this, but one of the things that's happened in Boise, if you think of HP being here for a long time and all of the intellectuals, individuals that spun off, Micron, MK, which if you're new to the Valley, a lot of people say, what was MK and what was that all about?
Yeah.
And then you have Albertsons, and you have these big, large companies that were here that brought in a lot of talent early. And so I think those people are here, but it seems like the Cradle Points, the ones you've talked about, they've been individuals. So the Borens with Clearwater. But as there gets more of an ecosystem where there are more investors that take those rides and make those spins, that's where you'll see all of it flourish, right?
Yeah, no question. And it's not just building the ecosystem, but the examples you gave are a great example of we need these things to happen also from a community and a charitable standpoint. Yeah. I mean, look at all the things that were built in this valley by the Albertsons family, by the Simplot family, by the Morrison and Knudsen families, Micron. Like so much of the community assets and parks and buildings and performance centers and things we have were because of them. And so I always look and say, okay, who's next, right? Mm-hmm. Who's coming in next to do that? And part of the way we're gonna be able to have those outcomes is by, helping to build and scale and create these new companies, which the community needs, because MK went away, right? And we see that happen over time with mergers and business, and Albertsons may go away, Yeah. And so what do we, who's coming?
That's not breaking news, by the way.
No. But who's coming behind them, right?
Right. Hey, talk to me a little bit about the role of higher education in this. And for a long time, it was always, how do our universities align with all the things that are going in the business? Yeah. How do you see Boise State, the other four-year schools, CWI, playing into what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's important, right? Like I hate to keep kind of referring to Utah, but that's an advantage they have is they really have done a good job of those institutions, and they have a lot of universities down there that are putting out qualified people for these jobs. And I think the frustration that I have is, as you know, it's slow to turn the boat, right? And so the reaction of, hey, here's what we need versus, I've met with higher education folks and said, like, here's what we need. And they're like, yeah, we get it. That's awesome. Like, I think 2028, we can, start rolling that out. And so they have those constraints, right, of being slow to move. But there's a lot of good people that are, trying to play their part. And I think with Boise State specifically, they have a phenomenal engineering school that's made a great difference, to Micron and to some of these other places. I think there's a lot that can be done. I think one of the big opportunities would really be like a sales a sales program, a top-notch sales program. I mean, this is what all of these software startups need, are great salespeople, and those are great jobs. Like, they can make a lot of money. And, you look at, for example, University of Washington.
I just hired a kid that started yesterday. Listen, this is going to be the first time in my life that I hired someone from BYU.
Wow, he must be really good.
I think he's going to be.
Yeah.
Played rugby down there, but he graduated from BYU in business with an emphasis on what you just said.
Yeah.
So they've got a program that basically is, I said, that's intriguing to me. And he went into it. He's like, oh, yeah, it was kind of business, but kind of the art of the deal kind of thing. That's the whole emphasis of the program. And super sharp kid. Again, might be the first BYU Cougar that
you don't
hire him either, do you?
I don't know if we have any. I'd have to think. It's tough. Gardner used to be
No way.
Well, he grew up in Idaho Falls, but he's kind of mostly got off that. But every once in a while it comes up a little bit, and I see he's still got that
in
his heart.
You gotta be careful with those guys.
Yeah.
Mark Cleverly at our office is that way. He's kind of a closet.
Because he grew up that way, right?
Oh, yeah.
He grew up, his dad was
Dave,
a big,
oh yeah.
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 It's unfortunate.
It's tough.
We're gonna get in trouble.
Yeah.
No, this kid's great. So I think it'll be good. But anyway, my point going back to it is when I asked him about his program, there are ways that universities can meet the needs of evolving economies and what's needed.
No question.
And getting these kids ready for today's world. And it is different now out there, right? Things have changed quickly because of technology and how things are rolling.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about next? There's so much I want to talk to you about.
Let's do it. You're running the show.
Want to talk
here.
Boise State?
Sure.
No, you don't.
Sure.
You don't. You chicken.
Well, no.
So we sent out a thing saying, hey, what don't you want to talk about to every guest? And guess what he puts on there? I don't want to touch Andy Avalos.
I knew you would like that.
No.
I put a little smiley face on there.
You did. We probably disagree on that a little bit.
I mean, listen, I love Andy. Andy's a Bronco. What I always tell people is Andy chose Boise State three times as a player, as an assistant coach, and as a head coach. And he bleeds blue and orange. I have nothing bad to say about Andy.
Yeah. I don't either.
Yeah.
But we see it differently. Let's move on.
Hey.
NIL. Let's talk about that.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah, it's tough. I mean.
So just everyone knows.
Yeah.
Travis Hawks, longtime owner of the Blue and Orange store.
Yeah.
Caps, regionally. You have Pro Image Sports stores
yep.
regionally. So,
yep.
So this is like a business passion of yours.
Yeah.
And you brought up you and Bill, Blue and Orange score,
yeah.
the Fiesta Bowl. Those were great days.
Mm-hmm.
Big time Boise State alumni fan, one of the biggest. You got a Boise State alumni shrine in the new office.
Got a shrine in the office, yep.
So very committed to this.
Yeah.
So talk about NIL.
Man, I feel like we could spend an hour just talking about NIL, and it's tough. I think that, I don't know, the system, you know the old saying, like, killing the golden goose, and this is what we're doing, you know, with college football. Like, in a time when it's never been more popular and there's never been more money coming into the system, but you know the greed is going to blow it all because of what they've done with conference realignment, you know, what they're, you know, the transfer portal, the NIL, like it. I think it's a pretty broken system. You know, the whole idea, I mean, listen, I understand it. Like we sold back in 2006 like thousands of number 41 jerseys, right, for Ian Johnson. And, you know, couldn't say Johnson on the back.
You don't use the Corey Hall example? Did you, Steve? Did you even sell Corey
Hall? We definitely sold Corey Hall jerseys.
Hey, his office is right
yes,
there.
Yes, we sold a lot of Corey Hall jerseys back in the day.
He finds out how much money you made off of it.
But Ian and Kellen Moore were the two big ones. And you get, like, those players should benefit from that. Like, nobody's arguing that. And when the whole NIL thing first happened, like, that was what it was supposed to be, right? It would be a market-driven
yes.
advertising deal. But that is not what it is.
And that people making money off the athletes.
Right.
I mean, that was the ruling, right?
Right.
The ruling of the Supreme Court was, hey, if you're making money off of name, image, and likeness,
yeah.
then you should be able to be reimbursed for that.
Yeah.
What has happened has nothing to do with the fact that you made a lot of money off these guys for a long time.
Nothing.
I appreciate your guilt because I think that's been very helpful to, like, contributing back to those that need it right now.
It has nothing to do with it now, where you're just, people are putting money into a collective and they're just paying the players and they're doing it without any trade-off of, you know,
no contract,
promotion, no contract. No. It's not what it was intended to be. I honestly don't think it's sustainable. Like, I just think that these donors are going to tire of it. You know, like, how many times is a donor going to write a $500,000 check for a player who then leaves after 1 year or gets hurt or doesn't play, and then they come back and ask for, you know, more money for the next guy? Like, I don't think it's sustainable, but
there's also
knows.
Competing. I mean, you take a school like Boise State, if you look at funding from the state,
yeah.
if you look at, you know, resources available for facilities, bonding capacity. If you look at how they just fund athletics there and you look at the budget, it's lean. So then you come out with this big master plan to redo the whole thing and North End Zone and all this stuff. And then you look at your pool of donors and you're like, okay, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
You want me to donate here or donate there or pay $500,000 to keep a running back?
Yeah.
I don't get it because, I don't know. There's a lot of opinions on it, too.
It's a huge problem, and what I've said to them, and I'm sure they've heard this from lots of people, is for me it's all coming out of the same bucket, right? Like, to you it's going into different buckets of collective, of facility expansion, of just operating budget, of coaches, whatever. For me it's coming out of the same bucket.
Yeah.
So if I have X number of dollars that I can give you to support the cause, where do you want it to go?
Yeah.
And Boise State is a great example of there's way more need than there is resource.
Be a tough environment to navigate right now. You got to hand it to those guys trying to do it.
It really is tough.
With that said, you think about how fortunate we are to have this program we have, the legacy, the history, the, I mean, it's been an amazing ride and will continue to be for this community, how it pulls people together. Sellouts now at all the basketball games.
Isn't that fun?
I mean, I didn't go Saturday, but, you know, you're selling out a Air Force game on a Saturday at 2.
Yeah, I mean, that never would have happened in the past for Air Force.
Yeah, there's a lot of really wonderful things going on.
Yeah.
And I think with playoffs starting, boy, they better make the playoff next year. This fan base is going to, like...
They've got an opportunity.
You can talk about Jesus all you want, but it's going to be over for the next guy.
We'll be okay. We'll be okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
Next year, and then you better reload for, right?
Yeah.
It's changed.
It's changed so much with, you know, because it used to be you had to kind of recruit a guy once, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you got him, and now you got to keep recruiting the same guy every year to keep him to stay and not go get in the portal.
Okay. That was one. Anything else on Boise State?
No.
I know you're good. Like the biggest Bronco.
Yeah.
Let's talk about pro sports.
Okay.
Your passion, you got a lot of passions there, but talk a little bit about what's evolving there and what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting environment because, for one thing, like these sports media rights, like they just keep going up and up and up, and I feel like we're in a bubble on those, and I feel like everyone is in the leagues, the players, like they're banking on these continuing to go up, and with you look at the broadcasters, like none of them are making money, right? Like ESPN, ABC, CBS, like they're all losing money, and so I just think there's a limit to what these broadcast rights can go for. But the other interesting thing is, like, the NFL and college football, like, they just continue to strengthen, right? The viewership goes up, and I think they benefit a lot from gambling. Like, it's an easy sport to gamble on. There's one game a week. Like, people get it. And they're benefiting NFL from fantasy football, right? I mean, this is a huge deal that drives viewership and interest that the other sports don't have because they have so many games, and you never know when they're playing. They're playing on a Tuesday night, and they're playing on a Thursday or whatever. So you look at the other sports, and man, like I would be concerned if I was the NBA commissioner or the Major League Baseball commissioner, because those viewership numbers are going down. I think with baseball, I don't think they're getting a younger demographic at all. And you know, with the NBA, I know you love the NBA. I love the NBA. I think the NBA is super underappreciated because I think the level of athleticism and skill is just, it's incredible. And you know, the NFL, the NBA, if you look at where the NBA was in the Michael Jordan heyday compared to now, I mean, it's night and day from a cultural standpoint. Yep. Right? And I think that's got to be concerning. And I love the NBA, like the skill that these guys have just blows my mind. But I don't know. What's the future of sports and media rights? And you know, the NBA's media rights deal is up next year, and they're thinking that it's going to go way higher. But is it? I don't know.
Did you listen to Roger Goodell?
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting.
It was interesting. Yeah.
What I appreciated, one, that guy makes $60 million a year to be the commissioner.
Amazing.
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 Wow.
Yeah.
So he better be smart.
Yeah.
But when he was asked the question about, you know, what they're looking at for streaming, because they got a lot of heat for putting that game on Peacock.
Yeah, the playoff
game.
And
his answer was really good. It just said, hey, listen, we're fishing where there are fish. And, like, I know everyone thinks that markets are static, but they're not. And it was a really good answer. He said, everyone is turning off their cable. They're shutting off their dishes. And they're finding their entertainment through these streaming services, so we got to go where they are. And it was a really good answer. And he talked about viewership on Peacock. This year's same game, same time over last year, and it was 25% higher. He talked about the ones on Amazon Thursday night games that were 20 to 30% higher over last year. So he says people are watching. So why wouldn't we go there, right? So I think they're all trying to keep up with technology, and it's an interesting time because when that happens, money shifts, right? And so there's vulnerabilities, and I think it's the smart people that figure that out that are going to probably win. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be it'll be really interesting, I think, with the streamers, because that's always been the thing that people said, like, this is why the media rights will continue to go up, is because of the streamers. But let's look at the streamers. None of the streamers are making money other than Netflix. So Netflix is making money. No one else is. Now, you look at Amazon and Apple. They're making lots of money in other parts of their business, not the streaming side. So, sure, it's plausible that Apple would pay a lot of money and lose money on their streaming because of the greater goal, right? And I get that, and that's very possible. But, you know, all these companies thought the gold at the end of the rainbow was to launch their own streaming service, and now we see, you know, Peacock struggling, and the you know, Warner Brothers and Max, you know, they combined, and I mean, there's just none of these streamers are making money.
Well, the news of the day are that you'll have ESPN.
Yeah, that just came out today.
And Peacock and
Fox Sports. ESPN and the Warner Brothers are going to have a combined sports app.
Yeah,
it's going to be fascinating to see how it goes.
It is going
to
be fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, shoes.
Yeah, so you know I'm a big shoe guy.
You don't say.
So this was...
It makes me uncomfortable, actually.
It does? Why does it make you uncomfortable?
Because sometimes I'll be sitting with you and I'll go, if there's ever a chance I'm going to need to use my concealed carry, it's because Travis has a pair of $15,000 shoes on sitting right next to me.
I don't have any $15,000 pairs of shoes. So, listen, I always have liked...
Close.
I've always liked shoes.
Come on now.
I didn't really get into the collectible, like those shoes that you can't buy in stores and like the Jordans and things. It was really during COVID. And this was kind of my, you know how everyone kind of delved into something during COVID to survive? And for me, it was shoes.
So it was either like humanitarian service, intellectual expansion, expensive shoes. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I really set you up for that one. So, you know, I'm a big Kobe guy and grew up a Laker fan. And so it's the combination. You remember, you know, Kobe died right before COVID. And then my son at the time was in high school and he'd gotten into shoes and he was starting to, you know, buy and sell shoes and buy shoes on GOAT and things. So it was a combination of all those things that started to get me really into it. But it's like kind of anything that you get into, you start getting like too into it. So I converted a room of my house into like a shoe room, and I have all these shoes displayed. But then I ran out of room, and so then at my office, I now have like 14 pairs of shoes displayed in my office. And then I'm still out of room, so I have now shoes. Like, my wife is so mad. So in the shoe room, we had these nice shelves put up, and it looked really nice, but now there's just shoes on the floor, lining the floor.
Your poor wife.
So, yeah, it's not.
The counter-argument is they'll probably never go down in value.
That's what I say. It's an investment class.
It's an investment.
Yeah, yeah. Right? It's an asset class.
What size shoe are you?
13.
13?
Yeah.
Probably 13s are not worth as much, probably, as...
Yeah. Yeah, if there's someone listening that is a size 13, like I'm probably willing to give you some shoes because I have too many at this point.
That's great. What's the most expensive pair of shoes you have? You're not going to tell me, but what's the most rare? Tell me about.
Yeah, so I like the. Well, I'm wearing some Travis Scott fragments, is what these are called. These are the Jordan 1 Low Scott fragments.
This is an honest.
Yeah.
This is like Scout's honor story. I'm sitting on a stage with you at when you did your groundbreaking for your building. And you told me about your Travis Scott's.
Yeah. And you didn't know who Travis Scott
was. I had to
was.
Google Travis Scott. Seriously. I'm like, someone's like, oh, do you know how much Travis's shoes are? And I'm like, why are there Travis? And I'm like, I just know that the swoosh was backwards.
I love that you Googled Travis Scott.
I Googled Travis Scott. I'm like, why is that guy famous?
I love that.
And the next thing I know, he was like a McDonald's, like, Happy Meal guy.
Yeah.
Was that what it was?
He did that. Yeah, he's...
Matthew's laughing at me.
He's popular. Oh, look.
Wait a minute. The guys...
Look.
You got a Travis Scott? Is that what that is?
Yeah. Wow. Did you wear that because you knew I was going to be wearing some Travs on the show?
I'm embarrassing you guys.
We had a 1 in 3 chance he'd wear that today.
So for those that are listening, Christopher Rabe has a Travis Scott sweatshirt on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I still don't understand the allure, man. But
hey, listen, so I was talking to a friend about this, and you actually know him, but I won't say his name, but I was talking to a friend about this, and he was just like, dude, I don't get it. Like, you're an idiot. Like, I can't believe you bought all these shoes. And I said, dude, you have 30 pinball machines that you've purchased. Like everyone is just kind of into their own thing.
Who do I know that has 30
pinball machines? I don't know, but I'll tell you after the show. I don't want to out him.
You have
him
to tell
here.
Me because I want a pinball machine.
Yeah. Oh, hey, this is the guy to talk to. He's got a lot of pinball machines.
30 pinball machines.
Oh yeah, maybe more. But it's like everyone is just into their own thing. Like, I mean, we're not here to start talking about your gun collection.
I got a sweet. Do you know what I'm into now?
What?
Is you know the old cigar Indians?
Yeah.
So there was a guy named Ralph Gallagher.
Okay.
Who carved these, and he was a prize boxer in a circus. And then he would carve, check it out, he would take a big chunk of wood and he would carve a cigar store Indian.
Oh, okay.
And he would paint it with the circus paint.
Okay.
So these are
sounds like, this sounds like artwork. I mean, like a piece of art.
It's totally art. So yeah. They're 80 to 90 year old, you know, 6 to 7 foot. There you go. So there's Ralph Gallagher.
Okay. I love that.
Okay, so I started collecting them, and it's a great story. I'll tell you real quickly. So there's a guy that's the national guy that finds these yard sales and old stuff. And so I start following him and checking out where he is. And so one day I call him and I said, hey, you got one I want to look at. How do I look at it? And he's got a California number. He's like, well, I'm in Eagle, Idaho. And I'm like, what are the odds you're in Eagle, Idaho? And he's like, hey, if you want to stop by and see him, I've got a couple of them right now. So I drive there. And he sends me the address, and he lives right across the street from Tom Sr. in Eagle.
Oh, my gosh. What a small world.
Small world, right?
Yeah.
Anyway.
How tall are these?
They're anywhere from 5 to 7 feet tall.
I like it because, you know, what I like, I've never bought one, but I've wanted to buy one, is like a totem. You know the totems? Like, they're similar where they're carved out of wood.
Hey, so that – how's – are you on the internet?
Yeah.
That's my office at my house. Go up, go down a little bit. This is weird. No, the other direction.
Up.
That is my, how's that on the internet? That is not right.
Oh, that is hilarious.
That's the corner of my office right there.
There you go.
Cowboys. Anyway.
That's awesome. So we're all into different stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next for Travis? Oh, hey, one other question.
Yeah.
So, you have been a long owner of a car lending business.
Yes.
Capital Auto Loans.
Yeah.
And I did want to ask you today, because pre this last little recession,
yeah,
a lot of the stuff I read was who's going to get hit hardest.
Yeah.
How's this going to go? And a lot of people that I trust that are very smart, economist said, wait till you see what happens to cars.
Yeah.
And their thesis was, you had COVID, everyone had extra money,
mm-hmm.
and you had cars that you could go buy, and then all of a sudden there was very little inventory. So then all of the manufacturers of cars revved up their machines to make more cars, and then you have this interest rate hike. And so they predicted just a gutting of the used car market and car values.
Yeah.
I don't think that really has happened. So I was wondering, what did you see?
Yeah, so first, what you talked about is exactly accurate. And what I can tell you that will be interesting to people is car loans nationwide, car loans that were originated in 2021 and 2022 are the worst performing batch of car loans ever. And the reason that has happened is exactly what you said, which is people got all the stimulus money, car values went up.
Overpaid.
They overpaid for cars, and because of stimulus money, they were also buying cars they couldn't really afford. And then what came right after that was the inflation, and specifically what's going to squeeze people is gas and food prices, right? And so it was just a triple whammy that really hurt people. And so a lot of car loans went into default, much more than would be standard, more than even we saw in the Great Recession. So
that happened.
That happened. And what you just, partly because of that, and partly what you just described with the values going way up and then oversupply and stuff, is why a lot of people thought the values would crater. from what it looks like now, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. It looks like car values have come down, and they're kind of slowly coming down. But, you know, believe it or not, there's still not full inventory of cars.
And why is that?
You know, some of the production, so the new car production has still not returned to pre-COVID level. And it's similar to like what you see in construction, where there's still delays on some of these materials. Like, they're still having some of those problems. And so I think we're getting the soft landing on car values, and it's good that they've come down, and it would be good if they continue to come down a little bit over the next few quarters. But the idea that they're just going to crash, is it looks like that's not going to happen at this point. And what we've seen on a loan performance standpoint is everybody adjusted. Banks, credit unions, everybody had gotten very aggressive, because the other problem is, if you go back to spring of 21, everybody's portfolios had the lowest delinquencies in the history of time. And it's for the same reason, like all the stimulus money, everyone was current, right? Everyone was current on their bills. So lenders were like, man, we're so smart. And this is us included. Our portfolio's never been better. And so we can go loan more, you know, we can go do it. Things are great. And then that thing flipped really quick. And so, you know, kind of the back half of 22 is when you saw lenders really tighten underwriting. And so now those bad loans are kind of working their way through the system, and performance is improving. But it's interesting. Like we've been in the auto loan business for almost 10 years now. And, we felt good kind of going in about our model, and used to say like, hey, our model will work in any environment. And man, that's really been tested. Like, we never would have anticipated COVID. And then all those things that happened after COVID, with car prices going way up, rates going up, crazy inflation, like all those things. So we've learned that, man, we gotta really be in the weeds on the data and understand the data, and we're looking at the data on like a daily basis. And there's people that have not made it. Like, we work with a bank out of Ohio that's our main underwriter, kind of credit provider. And our banker flew out last week and met with us, and he told us, I mean, they have multiple of their clients that are going under because they got over leveraged.
And some of it, it's just, but maybe a softer landing than.
Softer landing, yeah.
Hey, one other follow-on question. Yeah. Electric vehicles.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have predicted kind of what's happened, but what's your take on it?
You mean as far as like the demands not being where they thought?
Like,
yeah.
I mean, you go back to, I think, you know, you look at Tesla.
Yeah.
Hot and, you know, couldn't get your hands on them and performed really well. And then you saw everyone say, oh, we got to go do electric vehicles. I mean, I just thought, hey, they've won.
Yeah.
This is going to be the deal. And now their sales are not what anyone predicted.
No.
So
I think that a big thing, it goes back to like what you really believe about markets, and if markets decide or if markets don't decide. And if you look at, electronic vehicles and Teslas, et cetera, look at how long those heavy incentives were there, where people could get these major tax breaks by buying the car. So you didn't have a true market. You had a market with a big, heavy hand on the scale from the government incentivizing you to buy those cars. So now, as those incentives have gone away or reduced, and then, of course, there's much more supply, because it used to kind of be just Tesla, and now all these companies have rolled these out. And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is, like, we have a long history of the combustion engine, right? Like, we know what this is going to do. We have a long history. We have a short history with these batteries. And, I mean, you probably saw, like, with this crazy cold front on the East Coast, and these cars, the batteries weren't working correctly and were half the range and things like that. So I think a lot of people that weren't those early adopters are kind of like, I think I'll wait a little while.
Let's get version 2 or 3 or 4.
See how this plays out, right? Yeah. See how this plays out. So I think it has definitely been a huge surprise to the auto manufacturers, and it's they definitely
hey,
are.
Hey, listen, we get a lot of guests on here. Is there anyone that's got more breadth than you? Like, think about where we've gone. We need to hit politics to end it up here. Let's talk politics.
Okay.
Can you, like, we're sitting here second week of February.
Yeah.
It looks like Trump.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't know we were going to go here.
You don't want to be, I mean, like, you want to.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
I won't, I mean, I'm not going to have you, like, it's not going to be as bad as talking about your Travis sock, Travis Scott shoes. So Nevada was last night.
Yeah.
I woke up this morning anxious to see what happened.
Yeah.
And you know I'm a big Nikki Haley fan. Yeah. Yeah. So in the primary, she took a distant second to the ballot was Nikki Haley or I can't remember what it's like.
That, like none of the
anyone
above.
Anyone else. None
yeah.
of the above.
None of the above, yeah.
So none of the above absolutely slaughtered.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a 30-point difference.
Yeah.
And then the caucuses was always rigged for Trump anyway. Yeah. So that was Nevada. I haven't seen the Virgin Islands, which was last night either, but I don't know what that is. And
yeah.
But then you're going to South Carolina, which is her home state, and it doesn't look good. So Trump's our nominee. What plays out for our country?
You know, I think I think it's frustrating to me. I mean, we've talked about all these, you know, these great businesses and people and talent, and we talk about talent and entrepreneurism, and I mean, there's so like the strength of Idaho, the strength of our country has always been like the people, right? And the people doing what they do in a really unique way. I mean, it's what really separates us from the rest of the world, is kind of that spirit of the people, right? And so to me, it's just frustrating and disappointing that like these are our options for president, that like in this country filled with great people, that it's like Joe Biden and Donald Trump, that both are, you know, in their 70s, like, you know, they're better people that could do a better job. And I think with, you know, Trump is obviously super polarizing, but I don't know. I just feel like my biggest thing with Trump has always been I'm not a fan of this dividing of people, and I think we're in a bad spot as a country that's really driven by these social media algorithms of hate. Of you know, people just get in their own view of this is what it is, and this is. I mean, we're in the week of the Super Bowl, and there's like one of the top conversations is that the Super Bowl is going to be rigged for the Chiefs to win because Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift are plants for Joe Biden. I mean, it's ridiculous that's like our national conversation.
It's
on
crazy.
Any level. But there are people that really believe this, and they get in this algorithm cycle where they see all this stuff. And the dividing of people is the biggest risk I think that our country faces. And you look back, think back to the 1984 election, when Ronald Reagan won 49 states, 49 out of 50 states.
Listen, he's my, you know, I was thinking about this morning actually, because I read the news, and then I was thinking, I mean, I've read almost every book on Ronald Reagan. It was my, like, I was in high school then. I went back to a leadership conference in Valley Forge then, and Ronald Reagan was, like, my hero.
Yeah.
And what he did for the Republican Party specifically, one, he's known as a great communicator, but he brought people together like crazy. And it was all about how do we make the tent bigger, how do we make America better. It was this positive, let's come together. And, you know, I think those ideals, and he certainly wasn't perfect, but my goodness, that was the message, right? Is we are America, we can do this, we can do it together. And that does not seem to be any part of either party now.
Yeah.
And for sure the Republican Party, especially in Idaho, seems like how do we alienate and shrink the tent as much as we can? And there's this purity test of, If you believe there was an insurrection, and you believe Joe Biden's a legitimate president, well then you can't be a Republican. And it's just like, it's the craziness of what's the end game for both sides kind of dividing the country. What's the natural history of this? I mean, where does this go?
Yeah, it's just really sad. And you know, the point I was making with Reagan with winning 49 states is that would be impossible today, right? Like, yeah. Like there's states that would never go blue and would never go red because it's never going to be based on who do we actually think is the best leader or best president or whatever. It's just based on this is, you know, I'm always going to vote this way. And it's just, it's very much this division of people that, it's again, it's not good. Like it benefits, it's a consolidation of power and money and strength for that for a few that are driving this. And there's no benefit to the greater good to be in this environment where everything is so polarizing. And you look at how dysfunctional Washington is, it's because everything has to be, you know, we have to get 100% of what we want or we're not going to do the deal. And that's never going to work. And the other frustrating thing to me is that's not how it works in any other part of business. Like you sit down in this room with your partners, with, you know, with your employees, your partners, et cetera, like you're trying to create a win-win and a compromise and the best deal that you can get for yourself and for everybody else. Imagine if you stood with your partners, right? Like people that are, you're doing a joint venture and you just said, it's this or nothing.
Yeah, it would never work.
It would never work.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know where this goes. I worry for my grandkids. I worry for our country. I worry about, you know. And then it seems like you get some really good policy-driven Americans that know how to fix things, and that's not even part of the conversation, Travis. I mean, things that we should be fixing. We should actually fix immigration. We should do more for education. We should do more for positioning the United States on the world stage in so many different ways. And it's not even what we're talking about. We're talking about Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce because he did a Pfizer commercial.
Yeah.
Being, you know, it's crazy to me.
It is, and it's disheartening, you know, for sure. And I think what, I just try and, like, I've just taken the approach of, like, man, I'm just going to go out and try and do things the right way, build community, help people, create jobs, you know, those types of things. Because if you get caught in the minutia of that, it's disheartening. And, you know, at your conference last fall, when Paul Ryan was there, like his example was so great of talking about they had the immigration deal done. Like we see what's going on right now in our country with this crazy immigration problem at the border. They had the immigration deal done. Trump agreed to it. But then once word kind of got out, the hardliners came at Trump and said, you're granting citizenship to this group of people, which from Paul Ryan's perspective was like, this is a compromise, right? Like we're not going to get everything we want, but we're going to secure the border forever going forward. And in exchange for that, there's going to be a path to citizenship for some of these folks that are already here. And that was like, nope, that's a hard line in the sand. So what happened? They didn't do the deal, and now we've made the problem 10 times worse.
Exponentially worse.
Right?
And each side blames each other. And hey, one of the things I love about you is you're able to inspire people. I mean, you really do, whether it's in your businesses or in life. Leave us with something. I mean, we've had some good ups and downs on this podcast.
Some
ups being Travis Scott, downs being NIL, national politics, right? Give us something that what keeps you going? Why do you have the drive you have?
Yeah. Well, it kind of goes back to what I was just talking about. Like someone was asking me recently about like, hey, you know, would you be interested in just selling your company and retiring and, you know, that type of thing. And I was like, man, I feel such a responsibility, but also an opportunity to create jobs. And then also to be in a stewardship position of helping to create jobs that people like coming to work, if that makes sense. And so I think there's so many people that hate their job, kind of hate their situation, whatever else. I'm like, man, like if we can continue to grow this and create jobs where people like to come to work and we take care of people, like that's really making a difference. And so that is definitely something that drives me. And I'm very passionate about you know, culture. And I always say like a couple things. One is that culture points all directions. And so culture to me means, yeah, like we want our employees to be happy and feel like there's a good culture, but our culture is also reflected in what our partners think about us, what our investors think about us, what our vendors think about us, you know, anyone we work with, right? Our founders, for sure, that we're investing in. So culture points all directions. And I think the other thing is, it's really hard, and it's like you never get to the top of Culture Mountain. Like it's always a process and a build. And I think a lot of people think that their company has a good culture because it's a good culture for like the owners, you know, or the executives. So what I always say is how you can really judge a company's culture is go ask the rank and file. Go ask those new people, go ask those people that are at the bottom of the pay scale, what do you think about this job? What do you think about this culture? You know, is there transparency? You know, do you feel appreciated? You know, do you feel like you're being treated fairly? Those types of things. And so that's a drive because, again, like we're never going to get to the point where like we made it. We created this great culture for everybody because it's evolving, you know, every day. And so I think that is a big driver for me, as well as just I've, you know, born and raised in Boise. I love this valley. We're going to see a ton of growth. And, you know, we're very aligned on this. I know you guys here care a ton about what the future of this valley looks like. And I do, you know, I do as well. And we want to play our part to be good stewards. Like, everyone knows Boise is a great place to live. And it's great in large part because of the people. And like, we can't lose that. Like, you look at the problems of some of these other cities, we can't go down that path. And it's going to take a lot of stakeholders to be really vigilant to keep Boise and Treasure Valley, you know, what it is.
Love that. You're a good dude. Billy Hawks would be proud of you, my friend. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been fun.